do it. Let's try this. Let's do a share. Okay. I wonder if I can just turn it into a presentation here. So hopefully you'll be able to just see that. Okay. Thank you, Roger. As Roger said, I'm Kirsten. I'm the local outreach coordinator for Campaign Against Arms Trade. Campaign Against Arms Trade has been around since the 70s, got about 12 full-time employees, a few thousand supporters, operating around the country with an office in London and Glasgow. So Roger asked me to talk a little bit about the arms trade itself, as well as some of the impacts that it has. So let me introduce you to the arms trade. And in fact, there's an image of an arms trader introducing himself to a potential buyer. The arms business is one of Britain's larger businesses. It primarily sells aerospace products as an export. So you're looking at one of them here, which is a tornado aircraft. Typhoon aircraft. But typically, most of the export business from the UK, at least in terms of weapons, tends to be warplanes as well as missiles. So it tends to be bombs and guided missiles and long-range cruise missiles. So it sells those. But as well as the systems itself, you know, so the planes and the bombs, the industry makes quite a lot of money from selling components and service contracts. So they kind of operate on a kind of razor and blades model, as the marketers would have it, where, you know, once you buy one of these jets, you're probably locked into a contract for 10, 15, 20 years for keeping it up in the air. And so as we're talking about some of this stuff, we need to remember that while wars are going on using these weapons, it's often British technicians that are busy working in the background, keeping the products in the air to continue to kind of deliver the kind of attacks that they tend to do. So primarily that. New figures came out actually today on how big the industry is. This last year it sold £11 billion worth of products. Previous year was a bit more, and that's about 10% of the world's total, and that leaves that the UK as being the world's second largest arms dealer by value. So not a brilliant industry to be in. And the UK is one of the biggest players in it. So the question is, who's buying? And the first thing to say is Britain exchanges a lot of weapons with the Americans and with its European partners. So one of the things that Britain likes to do is it likes to develop new weapons, new warships or whatever, with, as it sees it, friendly countries, typically the Americans, or perhaps the Europeans, the Germans or the French. So you're looking at the cockpit of a Eurofighter on the screen. So there's quite a lot of exchanges going on there. But if you look at kind of simple exports, in other words, you know, who are we selling to that wasn't really involved in developing the weapons? Most of the exports are going out to the Middle East, with some a reasonable chunk going out to India and Pakistan, but mostly it's heading to the Middle East. And of those Middle Eastern buyers, Saudi Arabia is far and away the biggest purchaser. It's one of the biggest purchasers in the world. It has more combat aircraft flying than the RAF. So it's a really big buyer of the weapons. What you find with the arms trade generally globally is that the countries that are selling weapons tend to be, we'll talk about who's selling. The countries who are selling weapons tend to be the large industrialized nations. The United States is far and away the largest seller of weapons. We're in at number two. The buyers outside of the exchanges we talked about tend to be developing countries, of whom Saudi Arabia is one. So it's one of the things you notice about the arms industry. It's a way of maintaining colonial power. So it's part of a massive kind of transfer of funds from formerly colonized countries, former kind of client states of in Saudi Arabia's case, the UK, back to Britain or America. The industry is dominated by some very large companies. The sixth largest of those is BAE Systems, which is Britain's largest arms company, and they're the guys who make the Typhoons. But what you also find is that the industry is dominated by American arms companies. So Lockheed Martin being the biggest, Raytheon being a really important arms company, United Technologies Raytheon these days, Raytheon United Technologies, they change their names. As I say to one of my colleagues, you know, same garbage, different dumpster. So they're still doing that. And Raytheon's important because Raytheon makes a lot of its weapons here in the UK, including the Paveway bombs that are currently being used in Yemen. So as I say, big on the industry, £1 billion, 10% of the thing. We're quite a big player in it, kind of number two. We've got one of the largest arms companies in the world with us and a whole kind of slew of smaller companies. So there's almost always an arms company near you. There are like half a dozen near me here in Reading. A lot of people, like the guy in the picture, who is in fact an arms dealer, make a lot of money doing it. So what could be bad about that? What could be bad about funneling weapons from the developing countries to the Middle East? Well, there's probably three things to talk about, really. The first one is actually the reason we're having the chat, is it drives conflict. This is the site of a house in Yemen, in Sana'a. And I think we've got to say about the conflict in Yemen, which has been running for 5 years, at least in its current generation, current thing, is that much of the destruction in the country is being fueled by British arms sales and British weapons. The bomber you're looking at here would have been a Saudi jet, probably a Eurofighter Typhoon. Could have been a tornado because the Saudis are still running them. Very likely to have been a Paveway bomb. Bombs made by Raytheon have been found in factories, they've been found in medical centres, they've been found in warehouses. And what you've seen in Yemen is a kind of complete breakdown of the food supply, sanitation, all of that, which has meant that it has left half the country very much without access to medical facilities, in danger of starvation. It had, certainly 2 years ago, one of the largest cholera epidemics that the world has yet seen, actually, certainly in the last 100 years or so. And the weight of the conflict has fallen very heavily on children and young people. So we've seen something like 85,000 children die from the effects of starvation in the country. And the reason behind it is Saudi Arabia is very much trying to maintain the control of the peninsula as it sees it, which it sees as its territory. And it's part of a coalition with the United Arab Emirates, also armed by the United Kingdom, Bahrain, also armed by the United Kingdom, countries who are very much trying to kind of maintain, if you like, a lid on a number of different populations that are rising up. So one of the other challenges that you have with the arms trade is, as well as generating conflict of this kind, it also generates repression. And that works in several ways. I mean, one is that we simply sell them the vehicles and the tools, like, you know, tear gas. So this would be British made tear gas, by the way, that the Bahraini activist in the image is running from. So we sell them the tools for the repression. But what's also true is that as we're making those sales, as we're funneling cash from these countries, you'll find that the British government is very loath to actually criticize the governments of Bahrain or the government of Saudi Arabia or the UAE, because they don't want to put the arms sales at risk. So it's a kind of double whammy, really. We're busy selling them equipment to kind of repress the populations. And also we're silencing ourselves because we want to stay on top of the arms dealing. The other thing, impact of the business that we do is that it's corrupt. BAE Systems has a history of corruption investigations that the government has quietly dropped. But there's a lot of evidence to suggest that something like £6 billion worth of commissions were paid to the Saudi royal family for the deal that sold a lot of the Tornado aircraft and the Typhoon aircraft. And, you know, that investigation was dropped by Tony Blair, saying that he wanted to stop blood flowing in the streets. So there's a, in British streets. So that's a very, there's a very kind of grim relationship between ourselves and the Saudis. And so it's one of the ways that the Saudi regime actually loots its country, as well as from oil sales and those kind of things. It's spending money on weapons from which the royal family gets a cut. So it's all very bad, but we're resisting as we can. And I think it's really important to talk about the fact that, as well as the bad things going on, and as well as the terrible things that comes from the arms dealing, there is resistance going on. This was a protest outside the arms dealer dinner in London. And I think this was this year, in fact. And the line was very much arms dealers dying while Yemen starves. So these people were enjoying a kind of £200 a night banqueting meal based on the profits from the weapons that they were selling to Yemen, which, as we talked about, has been facing famine over the last several years. So various groups, different organizations, including ourselves, organizing protests, kind of making the point to the people concerned. We also took the government to court. So campaigning against arms trade won in the Court of Appeal, which halted at least new weapon sales to the Saudis for a period of about a year. Sorry to say, the government's decided to resume those weapon sales, and we're kind of looking at our options to kind of find another way to stop them. But certainly the battle in the courts is very much a thing that we are have been pursuing over the last several years, and with some success. And I think the third way that we kind of have a go at the arms industry is through events like this. So here's a group of people. This is flying kites, not drones. These are some of our lovely friends. You know, of course we can sit in front of the tanks, and of course we can kind of go out and take the government to court. But actually, a lot of what we do is nothing like so glamorous. I'm afraid it's setting up a little gazebo in a car park or outside last month there was outside of council offices, whatever, handing out leaflets, you know, saying hello to people in a socially distanced way, saying, hey, did you know about this? Did you know about that? And that's actually as much part of the resistance as sitting in front of a tank. So as I say, brief summary of the arms industry. You heard about how big it is. You've heard that we're selling a lot of stuff to Saudi Arabia. You've heard that it's sparking conflict, driving corruption, leading to repression in these countries. And you've also heard that actually people are protesting about it, taking the government to court and doing a bit of outreach. So hopefully we can have a chat later on, but that will give you a starting point for all that. And I'll drop my details in the chat. There are these, and you'll be able to follow up on anything we just talked about. All right, thank you.
Thanks very much, Kirsten. That's brilliant. And yes, indeed, we will come back to questions. I'm sure there'll be questions to you about that very interesting talk and what's happening, and also what Campaign Against Arms Trade is doing